Hey, this is Lena.
And this is Paul with the SEPS Paranormal Podcast. Check us out twice a month where we will be discussing our most recent paranormal investigations here in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
You can find us at www.sepsparanormal.podshow.com or go to our website, sepsparanormal.org.
Or you can subscribe through iTunes. Just type in SEPS Paranormal in the search field. Come by and check us out.
Do you want to dive into the bizarre world of the paranormal? Do ghosts, UFOs, or the supernatural amaze you to the point of wanting to learn more? Then you need BVRN, the Black Vault Radio Network. With more than 750 hours of on-demand talk radio, syndicated from more than 35 shows, the Black Vault Radio Network is your one-stop shop for the world of the unexplained. Check us out and tune in 24 hours a day. www.blackvaultradio.com. Again, that's www.blackvaultradio.com.
Hello? Who's that? Whoa! What the? From his bed, he's just sitting there. It sure scared the hell out of me, and now I do believe that ghosts are a certainty.
Check out their online catalog where you'll find bottle openers, signs, liquor caddies, toilet paper holders, and much more. much more. Think what that hub also does customers. It can turn your ideas into finished items as well. Hot rod your home with SpeakHub.com.
Yes, I'm ready. This is going to be a super amazing packed hour coming up.
I'm pumped.
I am too.
This music,
like, this music. It's like,
yeah. Just I'm pumped. What do we got? Oh, yeah. Ooh, book. Yeah.
Book giveaway. Yeah.
Book giveaway.
We're trying to clean out our show
right now. 8:08 p.m. Eastern time. Email in. First person to email in gets the book. What's the book, Doug?
What we have for you is Making Your Goals a Reality by legendary celebrity psychic Kenny Kingston.
Oh, that's a fun book.
To Valerie Porter. And, yes, so, I mean, Kenny Kingston, we've had him on the show.
Great guy. Great guy. Yes, a lot of fun. Good to talk to you.
Making Your Goals a Reality, and in this day and age, people need to.
like getting out of debt, keeping employed, the basics.
I want to get out of my arm.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I got my arm, exactly.
Email it. What is it?
Scott L. at ghostlytalk.com. First person emailing gets the book.
Excellent.
What do we got, Doug?
Now, I'm going to read this as quickly as possible because we've got to get on to this.
Oh, yes, we do.
This is amazing. Dr. Robert Schock is a full-time faculty member at the College of General Studies at Boston University since 1984. He earned his Ph.D. in geology and geophysics at Yale. Schock has been quoted extensively in the media, and that is absolutely true.
Since
we talked to him last time, I've seen his name over and over.
Oh, my goodness.
In the media for his pioneering research, recasting the date of the Great Sphinx of Egypt.
We talked to him about last time he was here, in depth.
As well as for his work on ancient cultures and monuments in such diverse countries as Peru, Bosnia, Egypt, and Japan. Now, what we're talking about today, though, is about the parapsychology revolution.
Ooh.
Ground in scientific acumen and constructive inquiry, this anthology shines a rare, clarifying light on the controversial realms of psychical and paranormal research, collecting key reports, essays, and arguments for more than a century of investigation into matters such as clairvoyance, telepathy, and poltergeist activity. The website is www.robertschock.com. That's Robert, SCHOCH.com. And, of course, that's already permanently linked up at Ghostly Talk.
Oh, it has been.
And we talk about Dr. Schock so much already. But so you probably have it in your bookmark.
Yeah.
But robertschock.com. We're going to talk about the parapsychology revolution. Welcome back to Ghostly Talk, Dr. Schock.
Well, thank you very much.
I can't tell you how happy I am to have you back, sir. I really mean that.
I appreciate that.
The work I don't want to dwell on the Sphinx, but the work you did on the Sphinx, I oogled last time, and I'm going to oogle again. I think it's some of the most fantastic work I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And one of the things is, though, when you dated, produced the date for the Great Sphinx of Egypt, and that, like, totally tickles Scott L's vein of interest, right? Then,
what was that, Dr. Schock?
Yeah.
Okay. And then you go into Parapsychology Revolution, which is talking about clairvoyance, telepathy, poltergeist. It just, that's totally right up my realm of interests in parapsychology. So what happens is you're definitely multifaceted in that case.
Thank you.
We're just going to keep showering you.
They're both such fascinating topics. You know that. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And, one of the things that we get to do because of Ghostly Talk, because we're, running around doing this kind of stuff, is we get invited to things sometimes. And one of the things that we just did, it was just back on Halloween night, we were invited to a seance kind of thing. It was billed as a Harry Houdini seance, even though the official ones have ended, that kind of thing.
Right.
But the psychic fellow, as a matter of fact, psychic Ken from Ken Berg. He wanted to run it as close to some of the spiritualism seances that you would hear, the kind that Harry Houdini ran around and debunked as much as possible, right? And of course those were filled with trumpets and things you don't see in this kind of setting anymore, but trumpets and trying to do the automatic writing and of course nobody had any ectoplasm up here, but that's the kind of setting that he tried to create in this thing, and unfortunately I don't think anything happened personally to me, but it was a really interesting thing to step back in time like that.
Yeah,
and it sounds like you went back in time and studied all kinds of stuff.
Oh yeah,
from just that heyday and even before. So what?
Yeah, it was an incredible time. I mean, the whole seance heyday and whatnot, but even before that. Before that classic heyday of seances in the very late 19th century, the classic period of what I would call the beginning of serious studies of the paranormal. They did a lot of, there was a lot of nonsense, but there was a lot of very serious work being done.
And how would you know that early in the game, do you think? I mean, if you sat down and you said, you know what, I've heard of people who are able to, read people's minds, or I've heard of people who are able to heal themselves. That was a big one with mesmerism, someone mesmerized a surf or something and then he suddenly could heal himself. I heard all these things. I have this theory. I have this theory that it's coming from a power called Zoo. I don't know. And then how do you prove it? And then what do you do? I mean, they had to be like, it just had to be a heyday back then, or a free for all kind of thing. And you had to have some really wacky ideas along with the.
Well, you had to, maybe so. But also, what they did actually in the 19th century. This brings up an interesting point. I'm not sure if you were driving it or not. But in the late 19th century, something that was developed very much for analyzing paranormal phenomena, what we would now call paranormal phenomena, is something that people don't realize this is where it came from in large part, but they use it all the time for everything else, and that is sophisticated statistics. Mm-hmm. Statistical analysis, probability, that type of thing.
Yeah.
Certainly it was around before, but actually a lot of it was developed to analyze what we would now call paranormal phenomena. So you had situations, for instance, in the late 19th century where people collected what are known as crisis apparitions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when someone dies, your grandmother dies, and you're hundreds of miles away and you think you see her ghost.
Yeah.
And it turns out her ghost appears at the foot of your bed exactly when it turns out she died. And, it's one thing nowadays to try to claim that with cell phones, you call people, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Right.
But back then, actually, in some ways, we have better data because then things were, in some cases, documented in writing before the person could have actually known their grandmother died, because they didn't have the mass type of communication. And some of the very early researchers in the 1870s, 1880s, they collected very well-documented cases like that. They looked at the population as a whole statistically. How many times do people just randomly hallucinate things? What is the probability that their random hallucinations would correspond with something real? Mm-hmm. You see where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
And they developed actually some very sophisticated mathematical and statistical techniques to try to sort out what was real, what is not real, could there really be something going on here? And those same techniques to this day are now applied routinely in, say, medical analysis, all kinds of scientific analysis, business analysis. So that shows how strong they are, but they actually originated looking at what we now call paranormal phenomena.
And I can believe that, because if you're studying something and it's all, at the time, everything was relatively new. I'm sure people had heard stories, grandma saw a ghost, or whatever. But this is the first, real big push into studying it, with the SPR in England and
exactly,
other
the SPR
things like
for, yeah, Society for Psychical Research.
Mm-hmm. Right, and so they tried to formalize it, and they tried to, bring in these mediums and psychics and actually study. So they needed a way to know, am I barking up the wrong tree? Does this need more more research, or should I abandon this road and try, as I hit Scott in the face, abandon a different, and go toward in this other direction, and statistics would be a very useful tool for them. So
exactly,
that's
exactly what they found. And like I said, a lot of this, what we now take for granted, in statistical analysis, was actually developed because you do have a situation where it's very hard to tease out what is real, what is not, what is just a chance coincidence, as they used the term back then, was coincidental. It becomes very important. They also tried very early on, and a lot of people don't realize how early on some of these serious researchers were looking at trying to induce paranormal phenomena in laboratory settings, not just seance settings, but, as controlled conditions as possible. For instance, taking a medium, getting information from them, or supposed information, seeing how well that correlates statistically with real information that you knew the medium or you had good control of the medium did not know otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So they were incredibly, and one thing I found in studying it and going back into history is that it wasn't just a lot of woo-woo, as some people would say. They were very sophisticated in teasing out the real data.
Well, it's interesting, even on a grassroots level today, that, it's one of the things that keeps coming up. It's like, well, we're trying to find a pattern somewhere. And this is from, John and Bill's ghost hunting group, in Ohio somewhere. It's something that comes up, and I wasn't aware that a lot of these statistical processes and functions we have come as a result, it sounds like, of people trying to find out, paranormal phenomena.
That's right.
Well, they didn't have much of a stock market back then.
Well, no.
So they're like, why should we invent statistics?
So they're
like, all right, well.
Yeah, no, it's actually, you hit upon it, though. It's a classic need. You invent things when you need them. And to tease out this type of information and to, try to take it seriously and see if there is something real to it, you need tools like that, including statistical tools.
One interesting thing that I had run across probably, 3 or 4 years ago, is John from Lansing.
John Statler.
John
Statler. Spent the weekend with him 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I know, and I blanked there. But he gave me a book called Trait Des Parapsychology or something, and it's a treaty of parapsychology. It's a it's a book. It was originally in French, but I of course didn't read the French one. I couldn't do that. I had to read the translation. But I remember that book as being, first of all, very difficult to read because it was essentially a compilation of all kinds of different theories that they had come up with up until the 50s or the 60s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the report on some, meeting that everybody had, like, in Moscow or something. I don't remember exactly. But they, or Warsaw, Poland. Everybody went to Warsaw or something, and they wrote this incredible history of parapsychology. And I remember reading some of the experiments that just don't seem to have much of a following nowadays. They did, experiments in clairvoyance and telepathy and psychokinesis. And, of course, at the time, everybody believed that there was this force underlying everything that that you can't detect with your eyes or with any meters or anything that a psychic medium or something is able to control.
Yeah.
And it was all about, physical mediumship.
Right.
Nowadays, everybody's all into the, mental mediumship. The, your loved one loves you still.
The classic medium type thing.
Yeah, but what I'm wondering is how...
We'll bitch about that in a little while.
Yeah. I'm writing that on my to-do list. I kind of miss that. I miss the experiments, the formal experiments, the building of rooms. They described where they would build rooms, and in order to take a medium in and have him or her do something phenomenal,
Right.
And they would really, really. These are people who were really dedicated to this.
Right.
Nowadays, it's more of a hobbyist kind of thing. I know a few institutions are still doing hard research, but it's more of a hobbyist thing now.
Yeah. No, unfortunately, this is actually, you're here to find something else. There's been a dearth of funding, you know, any kind of for serious research.
Mm-hmm.
There's just not a whole lot. You may be familiar with the Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research Labs.
And they
just closed down.
They shut that down, yeah.
They just shut down, ostensibly because Bob John, who really started and ran it, over a quarter century, retired. But, I mean, realistically, the funding's not there. There's just not a lot of funding. The Ryan Research Center, which used to be the parapsychology labs at Duke University, then
yeah.
split off. Uh-huh. They are still in existence, but they are struggling so badly for money. I was going to name another one, Kessler Parapsychology Unit, University of Edinburgh in Scotland. They're sort of making, you know, they're struggling along too. It's very much a situation where the funding, for whatever reason, just has not been there systematically.
And it seems the opposite, though, of what I would expect, because it seems to me that as more and more people are paying attention to this stuff, and people are paying attention because of, you know, books like the ones you're writing, books or TV shows, and the whole month of October, you turn on any cable channel.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And nowadays, there's somebody with their night vision camera. Every show is green. In white, man. It's driving me crazy.
Yeah, but you know, there's a tension there. This is something I see. There's a big tension there between, and I don't want to sound the wrong way, but between very serious researchers who, you know, when you're researching these types of things seriously, you end up not only confirming in some cases what people want to believe, but also debunking.
Oh,
things.
God, yeah.
And, you know, you debunk on a regular basis. And, I mean, you know, that's legitimate, what I'll call legitimate debunking, because there's also the skeptics with the capital S who debunk everything. whether, you know, so that's a whole other story.
They wear the capital S
well,
on
Dr.
their
Shock.
Shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah, but on their hand, you know, when someone, their whole, you know, they're so tied up with something emotionally, and then you have some very mundane explanation for it.
Yeah.
It's a very unpleasant situation to be in.
Oh, completely.
Well, I have a very personal...
But it doesn't lend itself to people donating money for the cause.
Well, that's true. But I have a personal story where that happened. I mean, I went out and I checked out this light or whatever that was supposed to appear, you know, and it was supposed to be the, you know, the somebody searching for the head of their daughter or something who was killed or something alongside of a road. Well, anyway, we found out, you know, through not very much experimentation, didn't take all that much,
but
we found out that it's just lights on a road about a mile away. And the way we tested it was I stood there in the middle of this supposedly haunted road all by myself in the dark with a cell phone with a signal that was dropping in and out.
In the country.
And I, in the country with nobody
what
around.
What you doing out here, boy?
And I sent my friend to that road about a mile away in his car, and then I had him flash his lights. And then it was kind of creepy, you know, experimentation, but sure enough, I saw him flashing his lights, and I'm like, there you go. And I was depressed. Not depressed, but I was... Let down, you know, because I didn't want it to be a mundane explanation.
You didn't want it to be a mundane explanation.
Oh, no.
Right. And then I couldn't set up the Moody's Light, Moody's Light, you know, fund or anything.
Another great example, really quick, is that, you know, Dr. Schott, this I think this paints a picture on what we talked about perfectly, because a couple friends of ours that are local here, that are into the paranormal, and just to give you, you know, one of them's a chemical engineer. He's a mad scientist. We love him.
Yeah,
he's a mad scientist, right?
Yeah.
And the other gentleman he fixes air like 740 the Boeing 747s. He works on these machines. This is what he does for a living. You know, 10 hours a day. So regardless of state, these are a couple of sharp guys. That's obvious. And there was an investigation they were on. And they explained it to me. And the one who works on airplanes, he has a very, very firm education and understanding of electrical engineering, too. So they were doing some work in this area, and the EMF meter spiked in an area.
Right.
Oh, my God. Excited. And everybody's excited because there's a ghost here. We found a ghost. It was so great. And these two gentlemen, our friends, said, okay, let's look around here. And they actually did some, you know, pulled some ceiling tiles out of the ceiling and saw there's fluorescent lights running through here. Okay.
Oh gosh, yeah.
And they explained this over and over again to these people, but they would not believe that.
Right, exactly.
They fought them. They're like, look, you know, we're serious researchers here, and this is not the real deal, right? So there's one of those situations you were talking about, I mean, right down to the bone, Dr. Shock.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, the same thing happened over 100 years ago, because when you may or may not be aware of this, when SPR, the Society for Psychical mm-hmm. Research, was founded in the 1880s, 1882 initially, a lot of what they called back then, and they still use the term spiritualists, were involved mm-hmm. with it. Mm-hmm. And they were absolutely, you know, this was going to be the end all and be all for them, because this society would prove spiritualism, prove all their beliefs, et cetera, et cetera. And they were, I mean, you know, incredibly upset when some of their favorite mediums were put to the test and found to be, frankly, frauds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not all of them, but some of them were. And, you know, then there was actually a big, semi-revolt within the SPR only a few years into its existence, where a bunch of spiritualists pulled out, and when they pulled out a lot of their money, of course,
mm-hmm.
And didn't want to fund an organization that would even dare question their favorite mediums.
That sounds like a lot like a Microsoft study.
So all I'm saying is, this, you know, this type of thing is nothing new.
Microsoft repeatedly finds, you know, they fund these wonderful studies about Linux, and then when it says, oh yeah, Linux runs perfectly, they go, oh well, we don't want to hear about that.
That's right. Let's try it again.
Well, this kind of thing is just history repeating itself. You know?
Exactly. And just like you were saying, the people with the fluorescent lights, they didn't want to, right? They didn't want to believe that they're
You're wrong. No, there's a ghost here. We know there's a ghost here.
Right. And that's just like the SPR people, the spiritualists who would pull out. They say, no, we know that this guy is good. He couldn't be committing fraud, et cetera, despite the clear evidence.
Oh my God! Yeah.
Well, and
nothing's changed, huh?
Evidently, but some people, you know, and I don't blame people for wanting to believe, you know, and even believing, I don't blame them for believing.
No, it's you got to have
somebody show you. You really do need to keep an open mind both ways.
Exactly. Well, I mean, are things to believe in the sense that there are things, you know, certain paranormal aspects that have been demonstrated, in my opinion, but that doesn't mean that they're all correct.
Uh-huh.
A classic analogy, this is, goes back over 100 years too, is that you know, back in the old days, money was real, like gold coins were gold.
Yeah.
You know, and so the point is that, you know, just because you get a piece of money in your change, like a gold coin, and then you find out when you take it home that it's plated, it's fake.
Ooh, yes.
Counterfeit. That doesn't mean all money is counterfeit.
No.
Well, you get the point.
True.
Just because one person commits fraud doesn't mean it's all fraud.
That's true.
Exactly true. Why don't we take a quick break here, Dr. Shock? Because, I mean, I'm losing my voice here. I'm getting so revved up on this thing. Let's do a quick break here for a couple minutes. Chill out. We're talking to Dr. Robert Shock. And this is just like, You walk away.
I am so glad that 2008, we get to do all these different things again. We get to talk. We got to talk again to
Glenn
Kimball.
Yeah.
We're talking to Dr. Robert Shock again. It's just the end of this year is definitely proceeding very well, thanks to your planning, Scott.
Oh well, thank you very much. Doug.
Meanwhile, we're gonna go take the quickest break we possibly can dig up,
so
we can get back to
this.
And meanwhile, I want you to go into your browsers and type in www.robertshock.com. That's Robert SCHOCH.com, or of course, it's been permanently linked up at ghostlytalk.com.
Yeah, check that out
for a while, and bring that up. And we're gonna be back right after this.
We'll be right back. Shadow governments, strange rituals, new world
shadow
order,
governments, strange
buried treasure,
new
planetary mind
control,
military
cover-up,
shadow governments, strange rituals, new world order, buried treasure, planetary mind control, corporate interests,
presidential assassinations,
unidentified flying objects, presidential assassinations,
pyramids,
population,
pyramids,
fascists,
cryptozoologists,
alchemists,
Out there.
It's a strange world.
Visit OutThereRadio.net for more information.
Interested in ghosts, UFOs? How about the occult? Are you psychic? Would you like to find out? Well, if you're intrigued by the world's curiosities and all that is paranormal, then Paralore.com is a place for you. Create your own profile, start a photo album, write a blog, or just hang out and watch countless hours worth of paranormal videos while chatting with other Paralore members. Who knows? You could win a prize or two if you're quick and brave enough. It's all here, and it's all free. Visit www.paralore.com and join today. Again, membership is free, and we know you won't be disappointed.
Paralore.com. Unlock your mind.
I saw what looked like a figure standing in the hall.
Okay, this is Green Team. We're ready for EVP sweep.
That is weird. These cameras don't do this.
Water supposedly will come off and on in various rooms.
It's on our EMF meter. Started some of the main ones.
You're listening to the number one source for paranormal evidence brought to you firsthand by real investigators in the field. No hoaxes, no disinformation. You're listening to The Ghost Project.
I found myself face to face with someone or something that was attempting to play with my psyche as well as my physical being.
How sure are you of that?
I'm 100% sure.
Talk.
All right. No problemo.
We're just complaining about our liner music before we come back.
No. Hey, that's good stuff.
We feel like dancing.
Well, yeah. All the music on Ghostly Talk.
Somebody starts singing some lyrics about teen angst right now.
The music on Ghostly Talk is independently produced. I highly recommend it. Yeah. We're talking to Dr. Robert Schock.
I don't know if he's still here.
Yeah, unless he's hung up on us. the website is www.robertschock.com. That's
yes.
Robert, SCHOCH.com. Of course, it's linked up at our site.
Yeah.
wow, we're talking about parapsychology with Robert Schock. The thing is...
We're talking about the paranormal on a whole new level, I think, with Dr. Robert Schock.
Exactly.
You know, this book and the points that we're hitting here tonight and the stuff we're going to hit, when I was going through this stuff, I'm like, this is like something at a whole different level, you know.
Right.
It's, you know, aside from like, well, you know, we're going to go out there and test this theory.
This is 101 level.
No, this is like a whole different game we're playing here, where we're actually thinking about everything that's being done here. And we're learning about some really cool history, too, which really just, you know, as far as statistics and things like that's concerned.
Right.
I had no idea about that.
Right.
You know, so we're learning here.
Fascinating stuff.
Where do we want to go from here, though?
I mean, well, I you know, what's interesting is I wanted to start out this half hour with a totally different question. I even told you guys what that was.
Yeah, we've been warned.
But I want to backtrack just a little bit,
okay.
Because I read this. You know, here's the thing. We talked about the Great Sphinx, right, a couple years ago.
With Dr. Schock, yeah.
With Dr. Schock. And the dating of it and how, you know, how the water flows and the erosion and all.
It was,
you know,
yeah,
and very scientific.
A lot of
very,
stuff,
very,
too, yeah.
And, of course, you know, that is fascinating, right?
Yeah.
How do you go from that... Okay, because that's science. I mean, you can go into many, many books and open up these books and say, you know, this is how water erodes things over time, and this is how this happens, and there was you can tell if there's been a flood by looking for these signs, and you know, you can take samples, and you can do this, and you can, you know. So, okay, there's science, right?
Yeah.
And, yes, there's a lot of give and take with science as well, because people have arguments in almost anything.
Yeah, yeah.
The sky may or may not be blue that day. But how do you go from that to parapsychology?
I think this is towards Dr. Schock, am I correct?
Yeah, this question is for Dr. Schock. Because it just seems, I mean, I believe everything's related. I think everything is interrelated, but not everybody does. And if you were talking to, you know, some Egyptian science,
an Egyptologist,
they'd probably say, yeah, well, you know, all that ghost stuff and moving things with your mind. Are you reading my mind right now? And they'd probably point their finger at you or do one of them hand signals, like talk to the hand, you know, because it doesn't seem to flow. And I love it that you've done this, but how do you leap over to parapsychology that way?
Well, actually, I don't see as much of a leap at all, because getting into all the ancient monuments, Egyptian monuments, the Great Sphinx, the Great Pyramid, all that type of stuff, I mean, one, you talked about Egyptologists. One thing, honestly, they cannot explain is why these structures were built. Yes, mm-hmm. they have their theories, but frankly, they're not real compelling.
Uh-huh.
And something I found, this is a short answer to a big question.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, something I found, I mean, consistently is throughout the world when you have similar types of structures, you know, these megalithic temples, these ancient huge, you know, generally they're made out of huge blocks of stone, whether they're pyramids, whether they're other types of temples and structures.
Yeah.
And there tend to be traditions with them consistently. And again, here we're talking about patterns. We talked before about patterns and pattern recognition, but traditions that have a lot of similarities, that these structures were used for some kind of ritual purposes, initiation purposes, that included what we might call altered states of consciousness, raising consciousness, going into realms that we would label as paranormal.
Mm.
And so you get these consistent patterns. Now, is this just a folk tales? Is just fairy tales? Is just things people make up consistently, even though they're in different parts of the world? Or could there be something real to it? So that's where I really got started in some ways.
I'm sorry.
The challenge is to look at this, look at it. Okay, so let's look at it skeptically, but with an open, objective eyes. Okay. Could there be something to it?
Well, by saying that, that makes perfect sense.
I think everything's interrelated.
Because,
in some way.
You know, the people come at things like the Great Pyramid. You put all this time and energy and effort into it. Why? And I think that's a valid question, but I think the why may have been totally overlooked.
Well, it has to be.
I think they were going to make
everyone
the
else.
Well, they're going to make the largest Starbucks in ancient civilization, and then the stock fell.
With the Great Pyramid, I think you know it. The answer to that, well, I can't answer that.
Yeah, what's the answer, Scott?
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'm going to straighten this out right here tonight. It has to be something, a structure like the Great Pyramid, because it's my bread and butter. We all know that. But, you know, and I spent many of my time sitting just like, you know, thinking this thing through, and it has to be something. To build a structure of that magnitude, we know the specs. We know how big this thing is.
Right.
It has to be the idea to... I'm echoing like crazy here.
I know, I hear it too.
The idea to build something that big, it has to be bigger than ourselves. It has to be something bigger than ourselves to go through all that trouble, like you were just saying, Dr. Shock.
Right, exactly. It's not just a tomb for a pharaoh.
That's
a secondary structure. You know, that's a secondary use. Fine, so be it. But it's just like, you know, we probably talked about this last time I was on. I don't remember now. But, you know, I a lot of times use the analogy of cathedrals in medieval Europe. You know, these cathedrals are not primarily tombs, even though you might find a few people buried there. They were for something else, what we would tend to call religious, spiritual, etc. And actually something in, this is another portion of the answer to your question.
Yeah.
I think a lot of religious experiences, what became later solidified as organized religions, actually came out of genuine paranormal experiences. At least that inspired them in part.
And that's true. I mean, there's a lot of things that I saw when I was, you know, a kid that were, you know, here's some religious figure, you know, with some bizarre thing going on in the background, and so there, these stories I think developed along those lines.
Well, we're talking about Jesus for the last hour, and I mean, a lot of the stories that came from him were things that were paranormal type things in nature. There were otherworldly things.
Well, now they're paranormal. Back then, I believe they were not scientific, but they were just normal.
Okay.
I think that was part of
the
argument.
But they were strange, nonetheless.
Well, they're strange to us, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, speaking of...
I mean, it's been very watered down. It's been very, you know, for instance, what now passes as the New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I didn't mean to get into religion or any
specific
religion, but since you bring it up, if you look at... The New Testament and the, quote, miracles and that type of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, clearly they've been modified, they've been censored, et cetera, but there's plenty of examples, essentially what we would call telepathy,
uh-huh.
in it, and, you know, other things that fit into the more general pattern of what has been demonstrated, in my opinion, and we make that case in the parapsychology revolution, has been demonstrated to be phenomena that in some cases can be absolutely real. And I don't want to sound the wrong way, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the person it's happening to or the people involved are, you know, are gods or anything like that.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I'm not
knocking Jesus, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I am in awe of your segue abilities, and that's probably why.
Thanks for keeping us on track.
We have absolutely horrible segue abilities. So I'm
so long we keep in fine tradition here. I know where you're going.
I got one, Dr. Shock. In addition to making miracles listed in the Bible. Mm-hmm. Of what practical use?
Well, here we go. This is what you were talking about. Segueing into the next topic.
What is paranormal?
One of the traditional. Okay, actually, you know what the traditional use of the paranormal is, and this goes back for thousands of years. And this is a side note before I get to the main thing.
Yeah,
cheating
is,
at cards.
No. Prayer. If you think about what is prayer. Prayer is telepathic communication with whatever you believe is God.
Yes.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Complete. I mean, most prayers are, quote, silent prayers. They're in your mind. And this has been used. I mean, there's so many people that, you know, they're most rationalist people, whatever. They're skeptics. There are people that are known to be like arch-skeptic debunkers, yet they, quote, believe in God. How do they talk to their God telepathically?
Uh-huh.
Am I making sense?
Makes perfect sense.
For some people, that's the most practical. They may deny all paranormal phenomena otherwise, but they pray to God telepathically.
Which is ironic. Which is so ironic, Dr. Shock, because
it is.
It's happened to me in the past. I know it's happened to you. And again, I'm not going to bag on Christians or religion, but I've had people.
I'm not ragging on
anyone. I'm not either. But I'm saying I've had people in the past when they found out the stuff that I'm interested in, the stuff that I do, uh-huh. They're like, "Well, you need Jesus, Scott. You need Jesus in your life. You need to pray. You need to pray." Scott, by saying that, Dr. Shock, your point that you just said, they're doing the same stuff essentially that I'm doing.
Exactly. But getting to practical uses of the paranormal, there are three that I would highlight off the top of my head, and really I think these are the three main ones. One goes way back to biblical times, and that is healing. In the book Parapsychology Revolution, I've got an article that it's an original article donated by Larry Dossey. I don't know if you know who that is, but he's a MD, a physician,
uh-huh.
And he is one of the foremost authorities on what's sometimes known as distance healing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Essentially, where you can call it what you want, you can call it concentrating, focusing, praying, whatever. But there have been numerous studies, you know, very rigorous scientific studies, what they call triple blind studies, etc., of having different groups of people. One group is prayed for. They don't know they're being prayed for. The people that are praying for them, you know, doing it long distance, et cetera, completely controlling for it and very consistently. And I use term pray very loosely. It could be people that think of themselves as psychic healers. It could be shamans, whatever. But very consistently, there's a statistical difference between the groups of people that have some kind of, we'll call it, distance healing applied to them versus those that don't. And, of course, by conventional wisdom, conventional science, this should not be the case. Yet it works, and it works not with just humans, but they've even done controlled studies on, for instance, mice. It's terrible to the poor mice, but they'll wound them purposefully and then see how quickly they'll heal, whether they're being focused on or not. And you know, this, again, you know, you hear, have stories like that going back to biblical times. Bring him up because I'm an advocate per se, but someone like Edgar Cayce. People have heard of Edgar Cayce. He was very much into not so much direct healing, but diagnosing people from a distance paranormally. And it's been demonstrated that, he was, way beyond statistical, you know, the statistics again, you know, he was hitting diagnoses that were correct on a regular basis that were way beyond question statistically significant.
Right, and I believe that. I am a bit of an advocate of a bit.
I'm just saying I don't belong to the Edgar Cayce Foundation.
Right, I don't
either. You know, et cetera, et cetera. And so I'm trying to be objective about him, but the fact is that he was onto something. He was doing something that had him, you know, was significant.
Well, and I had mentioned earlier one of the first things that they were flabbergasted with that mesmerism, which is what
exactly
later became
that
hypnosis,
was
they did a surf or something. They had said, okay, you are going to go under mesmerism, and then you're going to tell us what's wrong with you. And he diagnosed himself and couldn't have possibly known.
Exactly. So again, this goes back to the 18th, 19th centuries where they were doing this consistently. So the whole healing, and to me that makes sense as a natural scientist, that what we call paranormal or parapsychological phenomena should have some benefit to the species, benefit to the organism,
mm-hmm.
in healing. So healing makes perfect sense.
Okay, healing then.
So healing is one aspect. Sort of tied in with that is what I would call psychological therapeutic aspects of the paranormal.
Right.
A lot of people don't realize this because he didn't publish on it very heavily. In fact, he was advised not to be on the record about it. But Sigmund Freud, everyone's heard of Sigmund Freud?
Oh, yeah.
The great geniuses of the 20th century, whether you agree with him or disagree with him and his whole concept of psychoanalysis and whatnot. But he became, by the end of his life, absolutely convinced that telepathic transfer of information, for instance, was real. He and his associates and psychoanalysts from certainly the 1920s on, and this is well documented, they found consistently that there was telepathic information being passed back and forth, particularly between a psychoanalyst, the physician, and the patient. You know, because it would make sense in hindsight because they were in, you know, bonding often, you know, meeting repeatedly, et cetera. And there are numerous cases, and I have one in the book that I cite and explain in detail, but numerous cases where, for instance, something would happen to the psychoanalyst, the one providing the care and treatment, you know, some kind of, you know, something happened during their day or whatnot, their patient would have a dream that would reflect that, and their patient would come in the next day and be talking about what happened in the patient's dream, but it was a reflection, you know, things like that. And they were finding consistently that this was happening. You know, again, statistically, you know, you couldn't explain it away. And it seemed to have a mutual therapeutic benefit psychologically for both patient and practitioner in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
There's that aspect. Then there's also another, what I would call therapeutic aspect, is tied up with what commonly is referred to as poltergeist instances.
Okay.
Because many poltergeist instances, at least in my belief, based on the data and analysis, and I have witnessed minor poltergeist incident myself, you know, it's not discarnate spirits. It's not not literally ghosts from somewhere else, but usually what you have is a person in some kind of emotional, psychological turmoil who is working things out, acting things out, including paranormally. So what seems to be the focus of the poltergeist cases is in many cases not the focus, but in fact the instigator, if you would.
At
an unconscious level, at unconscious or subconscious level, and there are a number of documented cases where someone who was open to the paranormal took a person that was having incredible trouble with poltergeist, we'll put it that way, into therapy, worked out their psychological problems therapeutically, and lo and behold, the poltergeist instances that were plaguing them subsided and eventually ended.
Hollywood will not be happy to hear that.
No. So I would say that's another very practical aspect. And the thing is that practical aspect can't be applied if the practitioner, if the person that's helping the patient that isn't open to the paranormal and doesn't understand what's going on. Because on the other hand, if you look at some of the classic manuals to diagnose various kinds of mental disorders, literally in some cases, belief in telepathy or clairvoyance or a concept of a sixth sense, more or less even believing that such things could be real, much less claiming that you might have experienced them, can be used to help diagnose you as having a mental disorder.
Wow.
Literally. So, I mean, it's you've got an insane, to me, a crazy situation, which phenomena, if they were something else, the evidence is so overwhelming that there is reality to them, that they do occur once in a while, yet someone who is having trouble psychologically, you know, maybe, you know, has problems in their, whatever, if they claim they've had paranormal experience, that can be used against them to medically, by conventional, you know, by conventional psychologists.
And I'm glad that I'm not under somebody's
you better be glad. No, but seriously, I was shocked when I learned that. That was right in the manuals that are still used to this day.
Wow.
And it shows how poorly understood the paranormal is. That, you know, it's put in the same category as how should we say, total nonsense.
Well, I have to say we have a long way to go when it comes to the paranormal.
But we have
we do. I wanted to mention the last one, just, and I can't talk about
warfare. Go right ahead.
It's used for warfare. The CIA has used remote viewing for warfare. The Soviet Union apparently did a lot of work using the paranormal for warfare, especially remote viewing, you know, as a way to pick up intelligence. We have a chapter, there's a section by Captain Bremseth, who was in the U.S. Navy. He was a SEAL, and he was reviews it, basically, the CIA use. And there's a lot of reports now just coming out from Eastern Europe that during the some of the civil wars, I'll use that term, that occurred just in the last 20 years, for instance, the breakup of Yugoslavia and Bosnia and that type of thing, that they were applying what we would call paranormal techniques, paranormal essentially, you know, they didn't hold back. They used anything they could in fighting each other, including application of parapsychology.
My God.
Wow.
We could go on for days and days. I know we could.
Well, unfortunately, at least we have a good start now on...
Well, I tell you what. Let me ask you this.
Understanding of this book, The Parapsychology Revolution.
Could we get you back on sometime down the road in the near future?
Excellent.
Sure, absolutely. It's always great.
I mean, I'll be frank here. We're in our seventh year of broadcasting this show, Dr. Shock, and you are in my top five of people
Thank
we've had
you.
All these years. I mean, I absolutely adore the work you've done, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Unfortunately, we have to end the show, though. So don't leave. Stay right here, Dr. Shock. Don't leave.
Okay.
All right, great.
Fantastic. That's Dr. Robert Schock. The website,
always a
www.robertschock.com, Robert, S-C-H-O-C-H.com. That, of course, is linked up at ghostlytalk.com. We have to thank him for coming on. We have to thank Glenn Kimball for coming on. That's kimballcollege.com. Mm-hmm. And of course, John Cicchetti.
Our buddy John.
You know, there's this, Kimball College, I know that's like an online thing, but Kimball College, we've got Dr. Robert Schock the College of General Studies at Boston University. We had John Cicchetti.
From a college.
From Wesleyan Ohio.
Real scholarly
Wesleyan
type of show we had.
Yeah, what happened here?
I don't plan it like that. It just happens.
Well, regardless, I have to say thank you so much, everybody who listened. And I hope we got something out of this. Our website is, of course, www.ghostlytalk.com. And thank you, Scott L., for setting all that up, that scholarly thing. And Bonnie, two words. Neti Pot. Two more words. Get better.
Yeah, get better.
We miss you.
We miss you, Bonnie. You got to get back here and get back in the studio. We'll talk to you guys later. This has been Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott L.
And I'm Doug.
We'll see you next week.
Ghostly Talk! You have been listening to Ghostly Talk Paranormal Talk Radio. The Ghostly Talk audio program is distributed for free under the Open Content License. Please share with all your friends and support independent media.